Greetings, I am Shusara Kono Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shusara Kono Kumara. Welcome to Satsang tonight. You're joining us live from here in Charlotte, from the office of the Kumara Center for Spiritual Awareness. Thank you so much for joining us. Take a nice deep breath, get centered, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. And I'll bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask their vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in your service tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. Come on back. I apologize for our intro there. We have an old file that got popped in. For those of you who've listened for a while, you remember we had to change our name. So we're no longer the Shambhala Center. We're now the Kumara Center. But you are at the right place. And I am Shusara, and I'm joined tonight by PLEN, Megan, Linda, and Tim, part of our core council for the Kumara Center. And it's always a thrill to have everybody here with us for satsang. It's awesome having our core council members here when I do this program, because the interaction that we get by having them come up and ask questions or make comments, I think, is very good. And we've gotten really good reception from listeners who appreciate the questions that do come forward from our members. And I reminded them last week that it's awesome for me when they think to ask a question that a beginner would ask, because I am at a place where I tend to forget the questions that the beginners ask until someone asks me. So it's very helpful for me when they do that. So I'll remind all four of them as they sit there to please bring your beginner's questions forward tonight. That would be super. Okay. I don't have anything planned, of course. Shocker. we're gearing up here in Charlotte for we do intensives, which is normally something where we kind of go away for a whole weekend, and I hold it's like a meditation intensive. So we go into long, very deep meditations as a group throughout the course of the weekend, and we decided it was like what. 6-8 months ago, 9 months ago, something like that, when we did that here. So we're doing these mini ones now where it's like half the time And so we've got that coming up tomorrow. And we were just in meditation coming out of satsang here in Charlotte, and the energy was really high, very, very high. So I'm sitting in a kind of an odd space right now, trying to bring myself back here. So bear with me if I seem a little off. Okay. Who wants to say something? Something brilliant. Megan. I could tell she had something.
Beaming from me. I think the biggest challenge for me initially was understanding the whole thing about the doer. And just like as we were talking in our session earlier, that you, if you're trying to be a student of the work, you have to do something. And so I didn't really understand how you could be the doer in some situations and not in others, because then that kind of gave mine the support that, no, you can do things. You are able to do things. And recently, in the kind of shift and reforming that I've been going through, I've actually experienced, really for the first time, like truly experienced, spirit moving through. And I could tell the difference between the doer and spirit, and it is completely different. And so I don't know if with other beginners in trying to understand the doer versus, like, you know, am I the doer? Am I not? How can I not be the doer? How do I get away from being the doer, if I'm supposed to be doing this work? So I don't know. I don't know if that's something that other people may struggle with.
Excellent. That's an excellent point. And it's, you know, the whole concept of the doer is a slippery slope getting into it, because, of course, it's the personal self that thinks itself to be the doer that's trying to cognize the whole thing anyway. And so telling the thing that is identified with the concept that it's not the concept doesn't go over very well, right? Of course. But it is true. There is no doer. There is no doer. So that opens a whole can of worms, because for many, the first time they even just hear that statement that there is no doer, I mean, it will put them up against that, you know, mind hits that wall and it just stops, like, you know, and you literally will have people who experience like nausea or instant headache or whatever when they just come into that initial teaching. Because when you really sit and look at that, it will turn your reality upside down. You know, you've identified yourself as the form and as the name and the gender and the job and the family associations and the personality for however many years, just this cycle, not to mention lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And now someone comes into your awareness and says to you, there's no doer. You are not a doer. And it's like, whoa, that's not possible. Look at everything I've done, right? Look what I'm doing now. And the thing with the not being the doer is that as everything, it's purely experiential. So how do you explain using polarized language something that is outside of that, outside of the construct that you're functioning from? How do you get there? You see, that's always the challenge with any of this work, is using a polarized language to guide someone or lead someone to a point, but you can only lead them to a point because it can't be cognized from within the construct that this thing exists outside of. Right? That makes sense? So the personal self, or the small I, as it came up in as satsang earlier, people in writings and stuff and teachings will see like a small I represented versus a capital I, and or self written with a small s versus self with a capital S. And that personal self, which would be the small s or the small I of the I, is completely identified with being a doer. So remember, it believes itself to be separate. The personal self believes itself to be separate from everything, separate from its surroundings, separate from every other person, separate from all the animals and the ether itself. Yeah. And it's not the case. So it's a faulty perception. Everything is individuated but never separated. So there is only the one expressing itself as everything. And consciousness in the moment of perceived separation took on the identification that it was separate. And within the belief that it was separate came, you know, simultaneously the belief that it was capable of functioning on its own, that it is the, you know, the master of its own domain, that it is the will and the desire and the power behind everything that happens. And it takes pride in the fact that it is the doer, right? And it also, on the flip side, faults itself for being the doer just as much. I mean, how many people in the world see their own shortcomings and then hold that against themselves just as well? I can't do anything. Or I can't do anything right. Yeah. But I love the fact that I'm the doer. You know, my destiny is in my hands. And I will forge my own path. And, you know, it is my truth is my truth. And oh, what a bunch of malarkey. It's crazy. Just because it's your truth doesn't make it truth. Yeah. Truth is. But just because you believe something doesn't mean it's true. And just because you believe it's true for you doesn't make it that. You know? I saw back in, I think it was like the 1980s, HBO used to run this, they were running this comedy thing. Oh, I wish I could remember the name of it right now because y'all go search for it on YouTube. But Bob Saget was on it, a younger Bob Saget before he did the TV shows and all that stuff. And he did this thing in the skit where he said, he was talking about something about, you know, believing things. And he goes, you know, I believe everything I read. You know, he goes, I write it down and I read it and I believe it, you know, duh. And he was supposed to be, you know, it was obviously satirical and he was supposed to be very stupid, but it's so true. You know, of humanity, that how many things do you come across in the world where you read it or you hear it, you know, and then you take it on as a belief, you know, as if it's, and it's, and it functions as true for you. Does it make it true? Well, of course not. Of course not. There are layers and layers of truth. And even just within this one reality, something can function as true for you, but then you bump it up to the next level, even within this reality. And all of a sudden, the truth that sat there just fell apart. You know, so look from a scientific perspective. So scientists used to believe that matter was solid, you know. And then what did they discover? They discovered that an atom is more not matter than it is matter. By a lot. And all of a sudden, the truth behind what was believed just kind of falls apart. Same thing for the earth being flat, right? That was true for people for a long time. But was it true? No. And so what consciousness on this planet has to do is to continue as it has been doing since the fall. It has to continue to evolve to a place where it moves into the space Not that it moves into the space, where it reawakens to the space that it is, you know, which is non-polarized. Because living in the construct of polarization, there's nothing that's true, ultimately, going on here. Nothing. And outside of this reality, when a consciousness expands beyond the lower mind, the level of the lower mind, this reality dissolves completely. Just gone. No memory of it. No awareness of it. It's just gone. Yeah. But as I say over and over, you're here until you're not, which is very true. And within the being here, there's a level of doership that you will carry to a certain point, and it's necessary, right? Because what lower mind is very tricky. It's very sly, really good at what it does. So I could give you the teaching that you're not the doer, and then someone who's looking for an excuse out of not doing the work, or out of, let's say you have someone who in life is like a couch potato, like super lazy, they'll take that spiritual understanding and they'll utilize it to enable their own dysfunctional behavior. Well, what's the matter? I'm not the doer anyway. So it's like, so see, I'm not doing anything. I'll just sit here, right? When in fact, that's the hurdle that person has to get over, you know, for their highest good. But so you have to hold simultaneously both sides that ultimately you're not the doer. You can't know it until it is experienced, it's actualized, right? And then it's your knowing again, which it always has been, but you've lost sight of it. Okay, so that's, you know, fair enough. No big deal. Nothing to get down on yourself about. And until you're not, you know, here till you're not, so up until that point, utilize. And it's okay to utilize your sense of doership in the world, right? And be responsible for it. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, right? Remember, you're not here to be repulsed or in resistance to the personal self. And that's something that's very hard for me to get through to students, because again, that's experiential as well, because everyone wants to say, well, the personal self is, it's not real, or it's wrong, or it's a mess, or it's the opposite of our divinity. And so it becomes this thing that now is, you know, now that's the point of separation. And what's really happening is, you know, like I've said to you a million times, the ego or the personal self, the mind, plays all the roles. So it's playing the role of the one saying, you know, oh, I want to get rid of the ego. It's the ego saying that. That's not your divine self. It's the ego just as much as all of it is, right? And we utilize the mind to dissolve the mind. But the ego plays all of it the whole time, for a long time, you know. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We're not here to demonize the personal self. Right? Like I've said over and over, I mean, it's just faulty perception. It's faulty perception that led to identification. You know, so how many people identify themselves as like Packers fans, and then they turn around after however many years and decide they're going to like a new team? I mean, were they wrong for being Packers fans before they became Cowboy fans? No. It's just a shifting of your perception, a shifting of identification, right? Yeah. I mean, that's simple. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Can we go back to, because I think that's huge for a lot of people, especially people doing this work, because you have like, you're not the doer, right? But what you just explained, I think, is big when you were saying that you do utilize doership to some extent, you know, like, because I think that was my question earlier when we were having like the physical side, saying when you
you know, as Megan expressed, you feel spirit moving through you, you know, and it's like you get this like, oh, I feel like this is what I need to be moving towards. And then you have your spiritual teaching set in and you're like, well, I'm not, you know, like, who's the doer? Like, what, how am I getting this done if there's no doer? You know, and it's, I think we also speak about it when we do like the marketing committee. That's like a huge thing. And we're talking about how do we do this? You know, how do we get this done? How do we get towards this goal? You know, and even we were speaking earlier and it's kind of like you do this work and it's like, wait, it's okay for me to see that and it's okay for me to act upon it. Like, I don't have to be this spiritual person where everything is just, you know, doesn't bother me. I go with the flow. You know what I mean?
Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Didn't work for Jesus when he, you know, flipped the tables of the money changers. He wasn't going with the flow. Yeah. Right? Work is work. There's nothing wrong with work. There's nothing wrong with work. There's nothing wrong with setting a goal, working toward a goal. It's how you hold yourself in relation to it that becomes the problem, right? So if a goal is set and a plan is set into motion and you're so hell-bent on it being that you are completely unopen in your awareness to anything else that might come in from what I would say the universe, yeah, that will then allow it to move in a way that your limited human perception will allow for, that's the doer. The doer that says, no, we're not going to entertain that, and we're not going to entertain that, and no, we're sticking to the plan, and this is what's going to happen, right? Well, who are you to know everything that potentially could happen, and who are you to know all the little pieces that have to come into place to make this thing unfold in a way that will be the highest good for all concerned? And as soon as you step in and say no, well, you just killed the movement of spirit, you see? And spirit, yeah, I got a smile. Good. So spirit, you know, even to say moved through me, what? Really? How is that possible? Moved through me. See, that's held separate too. So what do we say? You go to our website, you know, kamaracenter.org. And one of the first things that pops up is we have pictures with little quotes of mine that pop up. And one of the ones on there says what in relation to this? That too. That too. What else? I'm quizzing them. We'll see how well they know the website.
Well, no one can hear us because they're not in the mic. So Megan said, rediscover your divine nature. And I said, you are individuated but never separated. Okay, Linda, what's yours?
What's the picture with the eye? The eye. What does it say? I'm going to shame all of my students right now that they don't know this. No. This is hysterical. God lives in you and through you as you. As you. Spirit moved through me. Hogwash. Hogwash. Your spirit. Yeah, and you have to watch it because the language is polarized. I felt the difference. Spirit moved through me as if you're the bystander, some individuated thing that watches the movement of spirit, which is separate from you, doing it. It is you. It is you. Yes, come. Megan has a question.
I don't even remember how I said it when I come up here, but... So This is the sequence of events that I felt happen. There was movement, and what followed was the chirping of mind with the fear and the doubt and the nausea and whatever. So to me, it felt as though I witnessed the whole thing mm-hmm. with the movement mm-hmm. and then the chirping. Because if it wasn't for the mm-hmm. chirping, I probably wouldn't have even noticed anything until it was done or something. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when you were just saying that, then it kind of like clicked in my head, like, well, okay, what followed that I pick up on is all the chirping and the nausea that comes and all the things that make you want to run away in the other direction.
But what did you just say? If it wasn't for the chirping, and what did you say?
I don't know. What did I say? Shoot. That I wouldn't have noticed?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So look at that statement. If it wasn't for the chirping, I probably wouldn't have even noticed. So what does that mean?
What your quote was, but I can't say verbatim because I'm terrible at it.
God lives in you and through you as you. There's no I. What did you just say? If it wasn't for the chirping, meaning the identification took place with the personal self in the moment. And it was that piece that could see it from kind of the outside. But if it wasn't for that piece, what did you say? I wouldn't even have noticed. Of course. Because awareness is. There's nothing outside of it watching it. There's nothing outside of it picking it apart, analyzing it. It is. And that's the point. Right. So when the personal self is not there, engaged, identified with, what's left? Right. What's left? You. You. Individuated, but never separated. And even that statement, you know, we have to use kind of polarized language, but there isn't even an I in that. You see? No, there isn't even an I there. So where's the doer? There's no doer. There's no doer. Ooh, she's having a moment. There's no doer. I don't know. What... Within the experience, there wasn't even an I there. And if there's no I, there's no doer.
So are you saying that in the moment that I recognized, well, the moment mine kicked in with the chirping and the whatever, and, wait, hold on. It's all coming to me. Hold on. So I... Megan thought when the states of mind came in, you know, the nausea, the fear, whatever, and said, oh, this just happened. So actually, I thought in that moment I did do something. Right? Is that what you're saying?
Sure, you would at that point.
Because mm-hmm. look at now you're fully in it. That just happened, meaning you're in linear time again. Identified with linear time, identified with pictures from the past, projections of the future. That's where the nausea comes from, because that was pure projection that created nausea. Yeah. Mm. Nervousness about, oh my God, what's going to happen now? Right. And out of the present moment.
What made it kick in? Why didn't I just, no one say I, but why didn't it keep going?
Because the story still is too strong to enable it to stay. Identification took place. somewhere thought registered and the thought was identified with, and it wouldn't even have been conscious. Mm-hmm. Right. It wouldn't even have been conscious, but thought precedes feeling. Always. It has to. It doesn't mean you're aware of the thought, though. Good. And if you, as a longstanding student of this work, got in there and looked, I would take you back to the moment where it flipped. And the moment, if it was nausea that came first, I would take you back into the nausea and to find what came, because there was thought that came before that that was identified with, and you could actually track it back, and that would show you a ton about what fear still sits there. Yeah. Okay, come on.
It was vulnerability and humility.
Okay, explain the humility part.
Mind was afraid it was going to humiliate itself.
Oh. So fear of embarrassment.
Correct.
And vulnerability. Fear of being vulnerable?
Well, mind thought it was being vulnerable and putting itself out there for people to receive it.
Good. So you know what to do with that, right?
Not really. What I did with it is I just kept pushing through it, and if I threw up, I threw up.
Good.
But I was smiling while doing it. So, I mean, that's all I knew to do.
Not necessary, by the way, but that's fine. Okay. So now you know what to do. Now you know what to do with... You witnessed it was the fear of vulnerability, the fear of embarrassment, right? So now you know what to do with those. Of course you do. Go in and process those out. Why am I afraid of potentially embarrassing myself in front of people or someone or that person or whatever it is? Why am I afraid? What unmet need sits there? It puts me in this spot where I'm afraid if this happens, it means this. What it says about me if it happens, you see? Because it's holding you. And the same thing with being vulnerable. Fear of vulnerability. And of course, you know, everybody listening to me, you're all experiencing that. Because the heart is 100% vulnerable. And the ego won't allow itself to be vulnerable. See, they're opposites of each other. So the heart can only be vulnerable. That's all it's got. That's it. Whereas the ego won't be vulnerable. So there's a fear of being that. Well, of course. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have an idea, because it was happening so fast in the moment, I have an idea as to why I experienced those two predominant emotions, and it is more or less a fear of, actually, mind has already kind of predicted the fact that it's going to fail. And the way it appeared to me was that mine will never think it's good enough. So whatever I'm doing is not enough. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. You're going to embarrass yourself somehow.
Yeah. So why is it that embarrassment is something we should run away from?
Well, it shouldn't be.
Well, but obviously the belief is that you should be.
Well, the way that I, because everything happened really so fast in the moment. The way that I look at me possibly embarrassing myself is it just kind of, it was, oh, well, so what if I do? I'm taking right action here. And whoever receives was meant to receive it. It had its purpose.
And who's out there to actually get embarrassed to begin with?
No one.
Sorry, I got tangled up in my cord.
Oh, how embarrassing.
That was good. So I guess for embarrassment, you're taking it personally, like.
Well, yeah. Is there any other way? How could you experience being embarrassed if you weren't identified with it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you want to be seen a certain way. Well, I don't. You know what I mean? With a personality, you want to be seen a certain way.
Yes.
And so if there's any possible way that you could be seen any other way than you want to be seen, then, yeah, I mean, that you're afraid to put yourself out there and you fear embarrassment and falling flat on your face.
Which is, you know, it's hysterical, the whole thing, because the reality of it is that, you know, ego as Megan can't control what ego as PLAN or Linda or Tim sees and perceives. So the whole concept of I have to hold myself in a certain place so I don't embarrass myself is ridiculous, because your concept of holding myself here for another person, they might find that embarrassing. And there's nothing you're going to do to change that.
Wait, say that again. The whole concept.
Let you just listen.
I'm trying.
Don't ask me to repeat things. Okay. I don't know if I can. What was I saying? Okay. Stop for a second. So if you hold yourself in this certain thing, and this is, you know, so typical of everybody. Everybody, you put a mask on for the public or for anyone around you because the mind does want to be seen in a certain way. So, but the thing is, so Megan, let's say Megan has this thing she holds as far as how she should present herself physically. Yeah. And let's say Megan, like, wouldn't dream of leaving the house without her makeup on. So she's one of those people, like, she goes to bed with her makeup on. She doesn't want to see herself without her makeup. So as soon as she gets out of the shower, she puts her makeup on, right? Now, she may hold that that makes her more presentable to the world. But there will be those out there who will actually think the exact opposite, right? They'll look at her and be like, she looks like a whore because of how much makeup she has on. And it doesn't matter what she does. She's not going to change their perception. So isn't it funny that we all walk around carrying all this stuff when in reality there's nothing you're going to do to alter someone's perception of you? They can only perceive you through their own filters, right? Just as you perceive them through your own filters. And there's nothing that's going to change that. And we spend so much time getting so caught up and being so, you know, stressed out and nervous about how we'll be received in the world. And it's just, it's ridiculous.
So then how do you get to a point where you can operate or move through the world where you don't feel that way? And I'm only asking as a, you know, as a student of the work, you know, as a beginner, how do you get there? Because, of course, that's something that's very difficult and nobody wants to always have that fear running, you know, how is everybody perceiving me? Mm-hmm. What about this? What about that about myself?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And it's, as everything in dissolution work, it's experiential, meaning, you know, all the work you're doing builds on each other. One piece builds on the next, builds on the next, builds on the next. So it's not like one experience is the thing that's like boom, you're there. It's a compilation of things. Because let's say, you know, you may get over the hurdle of not fearing going out in public without your makeup on, but you haven't gotten over the hurdle of appearing to the world like you don't have enough money. You see? And that's a whole other piece of the matrix that that is the personal self, that piece needs to get dissolved, and then another piece needs to get dissolved, and another piece, right? And at the end of the day, when it's all done and all the veils around all of that have been rendered, then it's done, and there's just no thought there anymore, you know. But when you have to recognize how all pervasive it is, you know, it's all, there's pride attached to all of it. It's this, the sense of your own pride in how you present yourself, who you are to the world, and will you be ashamed if someone knows that you do this for a living, because they would see you in a certain light, and, you know, because of the other way you present yourself physically, then they find out you do this, and now they think less of you, and that's a hurdle people have to get over, you know, all of it. And it's all comes down to, you know, on one level, there's nothing to take personally, because it doesn't serve you to take anything personally. On a greater level, there's nothing to take personally, because there's nothing personal actually happening here. There's one lower mind, and it's playing all of it. It's playing your personality, and the personality of the person sitting next to you, and the personality of the person, you know, across town, and the person on the other side of the globe. It's the same exact program, only one program. And there is nothing personal. So whatever you, however you have associated yourself with this personality that you're walking around believing yourself to be, it's a lie. It's a lie, you know, and spirit will present itself as whatever kind of makes the most sense in the moment. So sometimes spirit presents itself as the one who does fall down in public. Right? Why not? Just as much as it would present itself as the one who's got it all together. Well, why not? All things are the same. There's no preference. So what would it matter? Right? And then the beauty truly is that when all of that dissolution takes place, then you're just, you know, in the world. And this is where it's good for me to have the questions, because I forget that piece, right? I forget what it's like to walk around and be worried about what someone's going to think about me. It's been years since I had that. I was someone like, I wouldn't go out the house without putting mascara on at least, right? That's gone. Sometimes I put makeup on, sometimes I don't. Doesn't really matter. It's more like, do I have time? Or do I feel like it? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Doesn't matter. Either way, right? There used to be shame attached to, you know, the fact that in my personal story, I was so quote unquote intelligent. And I went to an amazing college. I got a great degree, you know, one of those people, right? And here I was living a life where my family was on food stamps, right? That was a source of quote unquote embarrassment for me for a while, until I did the work around that. And now I don't have any problem telling anybody that I don't have any money. I wouldn't have any problem telling anybody my credit's crap. Like, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. I know. And see, the thing is that you know your own heart, right? And that's a piece for me that came in so clearly, you know, it was a while ago, but it was so clear that anytime something came up where you could feel that someone took it in a certain way, and that maybe their perception was that my intent was whatever, their perception was wrong, And those are the things that would make someone feel guilty. And it became very clear to me that it was completely unnecessary because I know my heart. I know my heart. I don't intentionally do anything to hurt anybody. I don't intentionally try to get someone frustrated. I don't intentionally do anything that I'm going to, that I think would embarrass someone or make someone feel diminished, right? So if that has happened, unless, of course, it's with my students, sometimes I have to do that. But in the world, outside of my students, if that has happened and someone brings it to me, I'm not going to feel guilty about it. I'll apologize for it because it's not my intent, because I know my intent. And I'll say, I'm terribly sorry if it did affect you that way because it was not my intention. And then it's done. There's no more thought that ever has to go into it. It's just done. You know? And from that place, I forget. I forget what it's like to just be, you know, ultra concerned about how people take you. Because I don't care. And it's not an I don't care from the space of indifference, which covers pain. That's not it. It's truly, it doesn't mean anything to me. It just doesn't. And you all hold it to a certain degree or other. But it's you know, easily remedied if you really do the work. Easily remedied. I mean, if you just took, if you were capable of just taking the understanding that there's nothing happening here that actually is personal, if you took that, if you took the understanding that everything in your world is your projection to begin with, and in essence, it's all you, why would you feel funny about anything?
Said for other people, then this is actually coming to me now. So if you're dealing with someone,
oh, I keep forgetting about that.
You are such an embarrassment to us. It just never ends with you.
So if you have someone else, right? Okay, so if there's someone else that embarrasses you, mm-hmm. The same thing can be said that it's for one. Okay, so we know it's not personal, but you also know that person's heart, right? That person is not meaning to embarrass you.
Mm-hmm.
That person would never intend to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hey, then.
And unless they would, because some people do. There are a lot of people out there who are looking for opportunities to embarrass people. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than not. Looking for an opportunity to demean somebody, looking for an opportunity to diminish them in some way. Why? Because their self-worth is non-existent. And it's the only way they can feel some sense of self-worth is to take others down. That happens a lot. But let's make the assumption right now that if it's someone close in your life, that yes. Like if I looked at my husband, for example, of course, you know that the bottom line is, of course, he wouldn't try to embarrass me. He loves me. And if there was a moment that came where he did try to embarrass me, well, I would just know that it's just the personal self running and part of the program. And oh, well, that's what that is. And then I would take action as necessary there to point it out to him. You know. Where he wasn't functioning from his heart, and what did it serve? What was the agenda behind it? Because there was obviously an agenda. You don't do that unless you have a personal agenda. Yeah. But it doesn't do anything on my end, see? So it's not that I'd be embarrassed, but I would recognize the attempt to embarrass, right? Yeah, you'd see it. And then at least where I function from, now it's my job to point that out to him or to you or whomever. Right. But not, you know, if I'm out at the grocery store or something, I wouldn't probably. I don't have to, you know, do that with everybody. There's a level of discernment where you know with some people it's appropriate to point it out to them because it gives them an opportunity to see something deeper, and with other people you don't even bother because for some it might cause more trouble than not. Yeah. And for others it'll be a real gift, and that's just part that, but that's part of your own evolution, is moving into greater levels of discernment where you can differentiate this is appropriate here but it's not appropriate there, you know. Yeah. How are we doing time wise? It's time. Okay. So thank you, Megan, for all of your engagement tonight. It was excellent. And I hope all of you listening really appreciated having her personal experience brought forward so that you can all benefit from it. It is really a gift. So everybody send a little blessing to Megan for that tonight. Okay, we're going into our meditation, and we will be live again with you next Thursday night at 9. We all love you so very much. You have a wonderful night. Good night. Thank you.